Hello and welcome to the second full edition of the Day Trippers. If the first pod and the subsequent preview to yesterday's game have taught us anything, it's that perhaps Phil Casey can't predict results, but by God, we all love to speak about the role of Steven Gerrard and the decisions of Brendan Rodgers. Expect those topics to feature at least tangentially again tonight. We're recording this on Monday at 8 p.m. and for the record, I'm Trevor Downey and your Day Trippers tonight are Andy Young, Stephen Brown and Phil Casey. Lads, welcome. Only one place to start, I suppose, chaps. No doubt we'll get to the moaning presently, but to kick off on a positive note, nearly one-sixth of the season gone, and notoriously slow starters Liverpool Football Club, who've caused us to lament and groan so much this far, are second in the table, 2 points off the top. Phil Casey, why is that?
It's a combination of luck, circumstance, and Colo Torre.
Yes.
I want that. Yeah.
I don't think, like, I suppose I haven't watched the game on Saturday. I'm not going to get into a complete rant and a rave about things being terrible, because you're not second in the league when things are terrible. You're in Sunderland's position at the bottom of the league, struggling to defend things. We do have issues. There's no way around it, and I'm sure we'll be dealing with them later. But there's a lot of positives there. There's a lot of things that are working which didn't work before, and there's a solid base to build on for the rest of the season. My big issue coming out of the game, and I may have tweeted it, I may not, but I definitely thought it or said it to someone, that for me, I don't really look at the players as being the issue in terms of what they're doing. I see it more now as being maybe a question over the management and the managing of the players that's going on, and how those players are being managed. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out, because easily that game on Saturday could have been a draw. Mignolet makes a fine save at 2-1, down, touches around the post at the bottom corner. I know.
It's a super save.
He really changed that game. And again, it's another game where Mignolet has done something that's won us points in the end.
Okay, so to spin it back towards the general bent of the question, what you're telling me is Mignolet is a good thing. This is one of the reasons why we are where we are.
Mignolet has strong assets.
Okay. And where else do you lay credit for us being second in the league?
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, defensively we're a hell of a lot more solid than we have been for a long, long time. And when I say solid, yes, we give away chances, but I'm looking at two of the back four in Sacco and Torre, and they're, you know, not so much your old fashioned, but they're just incredibly intelligent in where they take up positions and where they play. So they always seem to get blocks in, they always seem to nick in raw balls, they always seem to get in the way of what's going on. And then the former Skirtle, this, maybe with the Southampton game inside, but he has done himself no world of justice in terms of what he's gone on with. And again, he was excellent in the middle of the centre in centre backs. Yes, he's mitigated that he doesn't have to go back to Mignolet as much as he would previously, but he just seems a lot more confident. And for me, a confident Martin Skirtle is the player of the year, Martin Skirtle, that we had 2 seasons ago. Skirtle always reminds me of a player who has one piss poor season and one extremely good season, and he can never seem to put 2 seasons together.
Would you give Rodgers a bit of credit for giving him a bit of a shake up?
No, I think Skirtle himself has been like that since he signed for the club. I don't think that's a Rodgers thing, I think that's just the way Martin Skirtle is.
Okay.
His confidence is brittle. If he went out now at the weekend, let's say, and Cameron Jerome or Chamakh roasts him alive, you could be looking at the old Martin Skirtle for another 5 or 6 months.
Okay, so we'll let go on two downhill here then. Let's keep the ball rolling on the positivity. Andy, why or where do you see any reasons for where we are in the league?
Just to echo Phil, really, there has been a lot of luck. Rodgers seems to have gone into protection mode at the start of the season. I think he's looked at the fixtures at the start of the season. You know, they're not going to teams, okay, we've had injuries, so he's had to change things. But he's gone into protection mode now, and it's pretty much a case of not conceding now. Liverpool were very, very vulnerable last season, all season. This season, you know, especially with three at the back, like, they're hard to score against. They will be hard to score against if he continues to use that system. The only problem is we're going to be looking at ugly football. But the fact that defensively they're a lot better has just meant that they're a harder team to beat, and the easier fixtures has had a lot to do with it. I mean, Liverpool have never really had such an easy start, so it's no coincidence really. But yeah. I think 13 points from 6 games, I mean, if you accumulate that across the season, Like it, that type of form gets you 70 odd points. That's Champions League. Not getting run away here or anything, but we should really be positive because there will come a stage where Liverpool start playing well, and we're normally better the second half of the season. So Liverpool can keep something going up to Christmas, and then by normal form starting to come in and win games and put game, like put wins together and go on runs. You never know.
Not to cut across, but look at Rodgers' history as a manager.
He's always been a second half of the season manager. Always. Even when Swansea, the year he got Swansea up, I think they got worked out with 65% of their total points after Christmas.
And it was based, massive amount. And an awful lot was based on their January signings.
Yeah.
Just as our January signings just last year.
Last season changed.
It's no coincidence that Brendan's talking about January signings already. Okay, we'll move it. Keep it moving. Stephen, ideas from yourself now. We've been very much focusing on defence. Would you have anything further up the pitch that you point at?
The reason Liverpool are second in the league is pure and simple Daniel Sturridge.
Thanks.
That's the good. Man is absolutely in the form of his career. The difference in Sturridge yesterday, even to when he was scoring goals at the start of the season with Suarez, is just absolutely immense. The two of them just love playing together. You can actually see it when they go out playing that they actually do have an understanding. And for two players that were so selfish when Sturridge was with Chelsea and Suarez last season before Sturridge arrived, the fact that they've actually decided that they're going to play together is a massive, massive boost for Liverpool in general. Because as you've seen, two Suarez goals anyway were just created by Sturridge doing the simple thing in probably a game. If that had been 2 weeks ago, he was shooting from both of them positions, regardless of who was in the middle. But I think the fact that Suarez was standing in the middle made a massive difference to his mind, knowing if that I roll that across, we score. And it was that simple.
Can I just say on Sturridge?
Sure, yeah.
This selfish thing, it goes back to the poor attitude and the selfish, right?
At Chelsea, yeah.
See?
Not since he came to Liverpool, he's been a different player.
No, listen, my thing is not so much. I don't think he was ever selfish or an egomaniac or arrogant. I think there's a storyline that comes out of Chelsea when somebody isn't working out at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I look at AVB. What was he? Selfish, arrogant, egocentric, and Chelsea dump him.
Yeah.
Then what happens? Sturridge, selfish, arrogant, egocentric.
They have the most selfish, most arrogant, most egocentric man of football managing the club at the moment.
Yeah. Right, well, so. I think the evidence was there for everyone to see. Sturridge is decision making in positions was disgraceful with Chelsea,
except when AVB was manager and
played him through
and played him and gave him the confidence and played him.
Yeah.
And when Sturridge was at Bolton,
he was the main man.
He was a class. He was a class
at the same rate when he was at Bolton as he's scoring at Liverpool. So I don't know if this thing is more a.
I think it's perceived.
Perceived media perception.
Yeah, media perception. London-based media perception, which is
driven
what we
by the whispers and the innuendo and the agendas that's set by clubs in London.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Well, that kind of brings us neatly into the review of the most recent game, which of course is Sunderland away. Andy, I'll start with you. What did you think worked well on the day?
Suarez and Sturridge, really. I mean, standout performance from both of them as well. Sturridge was absolutely brilliant.
Ask Andy? Sorry, I'm going to cut across you there because it comes in later on. It's one of the ideas I had later on. We might as well just talk about it now, seeing as you bring Suarez up. Would you have considered that a good performance? I know personally, I was throwing things at the TV with Suarez several times. I found him infuriating on the day.
Yeah, I think the way the game went, we were kind of lucky to see Suarez the way he finished the game. There was a time during the game, probably from about 20 minutes onwards, where he looked like his attitude had completely dropped. I thought he started well. I thought he looked bright to start with.
Yeah, the shrugging
and then something seemed to happen. He got frustrated. He could see Sunderland controlling the game, and he sort of went, "I've a pain in my hole at this place again."
You could
kind of see it. But then they scored. Then they got a second, and then near the end of the game, when Sunderland kind of ran out of steam and then Liverpool managed to score a third. It was you know, the happy Suarez.
Yeah, the tail is up.
But we're going to get that. That's the type of player he is, and that's his attitude. Mm. The South American kind of personality. I know what you mean. It could have been completely different.
Can anyone shed some light on obviously watching the match on Sky, and the camera seemed to focus on Suarez after the match when he was walking on the pitch. Seemed to be quite upset. Did anyone else notice that?
I thought he looked upset for the whole match. He was just.
Oh, he did. He didn't.
He just looked like he had the hump for an hour, the whole game.
As you say, his missus did have another child on Thursday and so
But for a guy who should be enjoying his first or second game back and really reveling in it, he scored two. I don't know exactly what you're saying.
I don't agree.
The opinion that he looked unhappy.
Just that he was walking off and he did look visibly upset.
I'm talking about you being infuriated, right? People will focus on Suarez
everything.
And the body language and everything for now. Pre-season was a classic example. Oh, he's not interested.
Yeah.
But no, I don't buy this thing. I think he was a player who was relieved to be back on the pitch, relieved to be back in league football. That enthusiasm gives way to fitness after 20-25 minutes. And by the end
of the game, there was a period of probably half an hour between when Sunderland were dominating. Suarez looked tired. And the other
thing, the other thing I don't like, the position that he was playing in, and I actually said it to you Andy on Sunday about it, a simple tactical switch between Moses and Suarez for me would have made a huge difference in the actual game. I
completely agree with you there.
Had they dropped Suarez into the 10 and pushed Moses on at a wider berth and pushed down further, say alongside Sturridge, Suarez's idea to play the false nine, or even as a 9.5/10,
whatever you want to call him, but behind the number 9,
he's ideal. If you're going to play there, he's ideal because he will get around
similar as he does for Uruguay behind Cavani.
And his two goals, they don't come from classic strikers' positions. He attacks from wide both times. For a start, he creates the third goal himself. He picks the ball up from Mignolet's throw, carries it, plays a beautiful core pass onto Sturridge's foot, and then follows the pass.
But the movement after the pass, and even for the first goal, because he just, I think it was O'Shea was picking him up when Sturridge burned past Cuellar, and John O'Shea, when Suarez put the ball in the net, John O'Shea turned around, didn't even know where he was. And the same with the third goal as well, the ball into Sturridge, and all the Sunderland defenders just followed the ball, and Suarez just strolled in at the back post. And it was such a clever moment from an obvious world class footballer. Whereas there would have been other forwards, Barini for example, would have charged towards, now he would have just charged towards the front post. Well, possibly maybe not Barini, but you know what I mean? Most other centre forwards, their main aim would be get to the front post. Suarez took a step and stopped. If you actually watch the goal again, he actually stops dead in the middle of the goal, waiting for the ball from Sturridge to come across.
He'll always go where the space is.
Yeah.
You know, he's not always determined to just make the...
But that's why he's world class.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll always go where the space is. And if that means hanging back to look for a cutback and not going into the box at all, which he does a lot, and clean up, you know, the clearance or whatever, he'll do it, you know.
I don't think, Trev, as much as... I think you're drawn to it, because I think naturally everyone is drawn to look at Suarez to see what Suarez is like. It's his first league game. It's Sunderland. It's not Man United.
Well, no. To clarify, Phil, what it was, I was sitting there watching it with my brother, and we've been watching it, like, you know, we've been watching the game 30 plus years, and I'm watching this guy who I really want to do well for us, and I really want him to show that, you know, he's really interested and up and ran and revved up and all the rest of it. And to be honest with you, the whole recent thing has just left a bad taste in my mouth, to the extent that my attitude and the conversation I had with my brothers, this little fucker better do it. He better do it. That's exactly how I felt. There's too much defensiveness about him because he's our player. I think he's an incredible footballer. And if he keeps doing what he did the last day, I'm happy out for as long as he's with us.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily have to warm to the lad, and I haven't. I still haven't.
But the question there that I have for you, Trev, is do you think that Suarez's attitude, or perceived attitude, was as bad as Torres for the 6 months before he left?
Oh, Christ. Not, no.
Do you think that he looked that long? No, because I did. I've seen shouts from people.
Yeah, no.
I won't say the T word. But I've seen shouts from people yesterday that were... He looks no more interesting than Torres did for the final 6 months.
Now, the body language thing, as Phil says, it's a red herring. It's a load of bullshit. But what I'm not talking about body language.
That wasn't red hair.
Well, no, in fairness. But I'm talking about a fella throwing up his hands when he doesn't get a pass. I'm talking about a fella moaning and jawing at a guy.
But Suarez done that before him.
I know he did, but do you not see where I'm going with this, which is where I feel that the kid... Well, clearly you don't. I feel that the kid has something to prove, and I think he's something to prove to us, and maybe he doesn't, and maybe he doesn't give a shit.
I don't think
maybe he doesn't give a shit.
But he doesn't. He doesn't give a
shit. But that doesn't stop me from having the hump that he doesn't give a shit.
Trev,
so I did.
Take an evening and watch an Argentinian football game, or any South American football game, and there's 22 of them added to
any Spanish
game. That's just,
or any Italian game.
Yeah, any game that isn't an English Premiership game.
Any game that isn't an English Premiership where people.
So football is a game played by assholes.
No, football is a game in those countries that express their passion through their hands.
They express their passion through their hands. Right. Before this gets very dodgy, let's move on to the next question. What were the problems? Here we go. We haven't been moaning. Let's start moaning. What were the problems? Steve, get the ball rolling, Chief.
I think the problem is the same problem we've had all season, and it's the same problem we've had at the end of last season, and it's Lucas and Gerrard. Just simple as, there's no energy. It looks to be a lack of fitness. I think it was noticeable in the last 20 minutes that Gerrard pushed further forward even. When Kelly came on, it seemed that Kelly tucked in closer to the centre-backs to make more of a back five, if you want to call it that. And Torre seemed to be going charging.
Torre was gone. It was the same as the United match.
Yeah.
The last 20 minutes, Torre is the driving force from midfield.
Colo Torre is, yesterday was just out of this world. It's such a pity that we didn't get him at 22 instead of 32, because
who needs Yaya when you have Colo?
We need Yaya. That's exactly what we need. That'd be the answer to everything.
Perfect.
But no, the main issues were the lack of energy in the middle, and then the lack of a link between Moses. Done a very, very good job yesterday, but that's not his natural game.
His natural game is
out wide running and attacking at players. Yeah. So he's trying to do his natural game, but in a different area of the pitch.
But he was game as hell.
Oh, he was. Fair to say,
I thought he really did.
He did. He filled in well.
He did.
I thought that for once, I seen again shouts that Gerrard's dictating the tempo of the game. When Sunderland were swarming us.
He needed to be on the ball.
Lee Cadamol, for a good half an hour, was the best centre midfielder on the pitch because he just kicked everything in the mouth.
That's
simple.
That's quite a sentence.
Henry Winter didn't think so.
Henry Winter,
then again, 3 years ago, Henry Winter thought so.
He had that Shelby amount of space, like when we played Swansea. He had just so many acres to just move in and around, and he was so comfortable. He could get his head
up. That's actually a very good
show. I don't know whether I've seen Cadamol play such a lovely ball over the top ever.
The ball in for the save Mignolet made.
But like you said, he had half a pitch to dink it. You know, he had a half a pitch to operate it.
I'll go back to 10 minutes in. Suarez had a chance 5 minutes beforehand. Remember, he cut in after the three
passes,
had a shot, right?
Yeah.
After that, there seemed to be a drop, a visible drop, that the energy that we had for 5 or 6 minutes at the opening dropped. And then I looked at one point and I was there going, is this taking the piss? Gerrard and Lucas were playing almost as two centre halves beside Skirtle.
They were in between.
Sacco and Torre were far side, so there was five. And then when Enrique and Henderson got back, there was seven. So there was seven there, and then from the halfway line up there was three, and there was a huge big gap, which was,
it was massive. It was at least
5 yards, and then I watched for the rest of the half. It was at least 15 yards between the nearest most forward and our highest most centre mid, and that gap can never be be contained. To me, it looks like the centre forwards are playing in a position which would suit a high line defence. Mignolet and Torre, visibly Sacco as well, they were driving to push up, and you can see the hand movements, right? And the two that couldn't move with that line,
Gerrard and Lucas,
and I'm not apportioning blame to either of them, because both of them are at fault equally in terms of sitting deep. So it prevented the defence from pushing up the way they wanted to push up. They stayed and we had a big gap, and we did seem to have a 25-40 minute spell where we were under the cosh,
we fell apart.
Wouldn't you think, like, with three men at the back, it would free up Gerrard to move forward? You know, because you don't need to keep a tight line, because there's an extra defender to push out into between the lines
There was a moment.
You know,
sorry.
It just makes no sense for me that Gerrard is so interested in sitting back.
There was a moment yesterday when, while we were under the cosh, I think it was about 5 minutes before half time, and Sunderland had a corner and it was cleared, ball was up the other end of the pitch, and Torre went over and absolutely bollocked Gerrard, and he physically grabbed him and went, get up the pitch. But it just didn't happen. It looks as if he's playing extra time at the end of a game where he's just ruined.
Can I point something to you, Andy, there? You were driving towards something there. What did change? Would everything change if we had, instead of Hendo, who God bless him, I'm very fond of, but he struggled badly in that position.
Right. No surprise.
If he was exposed by an Italian international.
Would it help if we had our best player in that situation, Glenn Johnson, on one side, and if we had new boy Sissoko performing well on the other? No. Would that change?
I don't know about Sissoko, but absolutely with Johnson. I actually think that's Enrique's probably strongest position. If you had Coutinho playing and somebody that's going to give him an out, because it was just incredible that every time Henderson or him got the ball, there was nobody coming over to even give them an option. It was just, they were screwed. There was nothing he could do. But I think that would be Enrique's best position. Henderson, that's not for him, okay? But if Johnson's playing there, that system all of a sudden becomes a little bit more attacking.
That's my point. So it kind of covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? It disguises how poor the lads are.
Because we all know Johnson's a little bit dodgy in defence. He falls asleep. If you take away that defensive responsibility and you take it away from Enrique, isn't it just, it would just make it an unbelievable change to both them players, because Enrique suffers terribly with his confidence, you know, and Johnson, you just can't trust him at right back. I just think that would be.
You mean in a four?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he's what he does going forward makes up for it. But
I think though the problem there you have is that you put the two boys in, they push on,
and then we get
exposed.
And
we still have a gap.
Yeah.
Sure.
So say Enrique and Johnson are both gone and they're level with say Moses, who was the deepest.
The number 10, as it should be. Yeah.
Okay? But they still don't have anything bridging that position. To the 25 yards behind them, where the two boys are standing beside the centre half.
They shouldn't both go, really, though. In an ideal wing back type of formation, if the right winger goes, the left winger sits back, and you protect that way. It'd be criminal if they were both up.
But I would argue to the contrary.
Yeah.
In the way that we're set up as a 3-4-1-2, which is what it is, right? Mm. It's not a 3-5-2; it's 3-4-1-2. That you're two fulls aren't fulls; they are wingers, right?
Mm.
And if both of them should be gone, because that's how you pin back their fullbacks.
Maggio and the Sane
from that. And it stops them from coming on. The idea of having your two mids is that one of the centre mids, has to be able to get up and become a fifth man in attack and a fifth man in defence.
Mm.
And if neither of your centre mids are able to get up, you're effectively playing five at the back, because that's what both of them are sitting on top, which should really allay then if you do push your fullbacks on, because they can drop in and your two wide centre backs go wider, right? But you still then have an even bigger gap between.
And what was happening at the start of the season was Lucas had enough mobility in the first half to be that guy who was actually breaking forward and intercepting, breaking forward and trying to play a short ball. But we get into the second half and it falls apart.
Yeah, but I noticed against in the Stoke game, if you go right back to the Stoke game and have a look at it again, Gerrard was the deepest of the midfielders. Lucas never played deep that day. Lucas actually attacked Stoke from the halfway line into their own half.
That's the way it should be done.
Yeah.
With the 3-4-2, that is the way it's aligned to be. There's one that will be your deepest of the two middle, and then
one that goes with
there's one that goes and just does the shitty work, the donkey work in between. I think we have a fucking perfect player that can do that for us week in week out for 90 minutes, and he's still playing right wing back.
Okay, well, we're going to come on to that later.
He's going to be forced into not playing there.
Can I just say on the issues and the problems, right, I'll come back to my bugbear, which is Brendan Rodgers will not make a decision, and every week it goes by the decision making becomes more and more obvious, right? He had a call to make after the Manchester United game. He knew about, he took Lucas off himself because he'd lack an energy, right? He had Gerrard, who played 90 minutes against United.
He had Lucas,
who was struggling in the United game, right?
Mm.
So instead of making the decision, the brave decision, the decision that a Ferguson, for want of a better word, would have made anyway, because he's looking at a 34-year-old player and he's saying, 290 minutes, 270 minutes in 7 days? Nah. You can sit this one out, Stevie, or he would have sat him out on Wednesday. I guarantee you, he wouldn't have started him on Wednesday night against United. Regardless of being United, it was the League Cup, he would have sat it out, right?
Mm.
And Lucas wouldn't have started at the weekend, and Gerrard would have started it fully fresh, having had a week to rest coming up to the Sunderland game itself. So it comes back to Brendan. And again, the easy option is to, he doesn't want to drop Henderson, so what's he do? He accommodates him at right wing back, despite 4 games now. The one time Henderson played well was filling in after we'd lost a man against Blackburn in the game when we had Flanagan sent off.
Flanagan was sent off.
That was the only time he's played well on right wing back or right back, wherever you want to go. So for me, the question comes back to Brendan's ability to manage a squad.
I think Brendan's ability to manage an 18,
yeah.
Not even a full squad. To manage the matchday squad of 18.
That's a second issue, but I'm talking about.
I can say Gerrard or Lucas got injured yesterday after 15 minutes. Just hypothetically, who comes in? Well, it was the obvious move that should have been done before the game. Would have been
centre midfielder.
No, but the obvious move that should have been done to start the game was push Henderson into the middle and start Sterling. Or
Laurie was there.
Laurie was in. Alberto wasn't in the squad.
Alberto, who he paid 7 million for in his 21 years of age.
Can I just ask, right? Is there a madness in my mind, but Rodgers getting away with his decisions as opposed to making good decisions?
Because he's getting results. Yeah. I think that's the big shout that we need to make. That I don't know how, but for some reason, we're second in the league. We aren't as good as Chelsea when Chelsea get going.
No. At the moment, I'd argue we're better than Chelsea because Chelsea are dirge as well.
We're not as good as Spurs.
We aren't as good as Spurs.
For the first half an hour.
Spurs had Sturridge. Spurs would probably have.
Soldado has no movement.
Right. Well, look, let's keep it to us and let's keep it to what we're doing. We need to look at one more thing here before we move away, and we've kind of gone really over on this, nearly done half an hour in this review, but I do want to talk about it because it's three at the back and it's a huge thing. I just want to get your ideas about whether it's working or not. I've got one thing to say and then I'm going to leave it. And my thing to say is this. This deep defending is giving me serious, serious problems with my heart. I cannot take it. We invite teams on. We wait. We hold. Nobody goes to the ball. Nobody closes the ball until right at the edge of the box. And then you might get someone staggering out.
I touched on it last week.
But sorry, Phil, I just want to say this.
Steve.
That goes to your two centre midfielders.
Of course it does.
The trees at the back doesn't
affect it. Of course it does.
I think I touched on it last week, and that's going to sound like I'm absolutely Rodgers bashing this evening. And I am. But anyway, I look at it and I say, okay, three at the back, we shouldn't be deep. Three at the back, five midfield, whatever way you want to put it, we should be looking to dominate possession. We're not dominating possession. We're not pressing the high line. All his 147 page PowerPoint presentation which he used to get his job was based around high line, high pressing, high possession, passing, killing teams to death with passing, right? Not worrying about dead by football. Not making millions of chances, but cutting teams open and making brilliant chances, right? What the fuck has happened with it? Because I tell you what, I haven't seen us once dominate possession. It's like watching Julio.
First half against Stoke.
Sorry, first half against Stoke. And that's the best. I sat there today going, did I imagine all that? The impression I'm getting of Rodgers at the moment is he's a great talker. And he's prepared to dump his philosophy as soon as he thinks people have forgotten about what he says, because he forgets what he says. I'm convinced he forgets what he says.
There is no topic, Phil. There is no topic which we can raise that doesn't lead back down the Rodgers wormhole with you. No. So
at the end of the day, we love trade at the back if it's done properly.
We love trade at the back.
I love trade.
Do
the back.
We love trade at the back? Do we all
trade
the back?
I've never seen trade at the back look so flat. you know, it is painful, but.
It's nearly true.
Rodgers will come. I think it will come that Liverpool start being a possession football team again. At the moment, they're grinding out results, and we can only just take it. And we'll be thankful looking back on them 6 or 7 or 8 poxy looking performances. We'll look back and we'll be grateful. If Liverpool are in a good position in January and they're playing nice football and they're getting results, you look back in them 7 or 8 games, you go, what are we complaining about?
Everybody misses Phil,
But is it because the team is missing its fulcrum?
Of course.
Coutinho does beautifully, which you won't get from Moses. It's not Moses' fault, because it's not his
game. It's not the kid's fault.
But Coutinho can hold the ball for 5 or 6 seconds.
Yeah.
He can take the ball in a tight area, yeah. little move, and he still has the ball five or six seconds later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And next thing you know, everything opens up and he's passes.
Yeah.
With Moses, he wants the turner. You know, there isn't really anyone. I don't think even Gerrard could do that the way Coutinho does that job there.
Mm.
Like, it's brilliant,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I just want to point out, I'm not bashing Rodgers because I don't like Rodgers.
Sure,
I do
sure.
like the man.
Yeah, go.
He's great to listen to. Right? Yeah. My issue is, don't set out at the very start and uphold it for over a season that you believe in possession-based football, right?
Uh-huh.
In high pressing, high defensive line, mm. right? And then come to this season and it just disappears, right? That's my deepest frustration I have with the way we're playing and with his
because you want to see tactics. Possession football.
I love possession football.
Of course.
I grew up watching Liverpool in the 80s. I love possession football. Mm. I don't mind a pragmatic approach every now and then, depending on the opposition you're playing.
Mm.
We're taking a fucking pragmatic approach against Sunderland and Southampton and
but
Swansea.
Southampton at home.
But Liverpool in the 70s and 80s were, while we were winning things, were unbelievably boring because they just kill games with possession.
But that's my point, Steve.
People want too many things. People want too many variations on it. I'm delighted with where we are in the league. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Performance has been shite, but we're second in the league. I'd take that all season. I really would. I take it all season. Yeah, but I'd love to go back to 08-09 when we were fucking smashing teams 5-0 every week and we were running over teams.
We weren't in the first half of the season.
No, but towards the end,
for me, that's the white light. I think back to the first half of 08-09 and it wasn't great the first half of the season.
But there were so many 1-0s.
The second half was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we had some brutal draws. I remember West Ham at home in the 08-09.
Drew 1-0, got top of the league and still got beat.
But it was late wins. Was it another thing? You could win a game late.
And to be honest with you, hopefully we're starting to learn that. Look, it probably comes across that I'm after hammering the man, and in fairness, in my eyes, he deserves it at this moment in time for the way we're playing. But I do want to succeed. I'm not a Rodgers out character.
Yeah,
right?
You just.
I'm just frustrated that what we were made to believe in, what he brought us along as his idea and his vision,
seems to have gone.
Has been torfed.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's move on to our next section then, chaps, after a hugely, hugely extensive review that turned into a bit of a rant there by all of us. This is listener suggestion, which is a new feature designed to increase listener input to the pod. So we asked for suggestions of topics and questions to the At The Day Trippers 1 account or at Danny Trev, my own. Response was very good. What we aim to do here is have one suggestion discussed in some depth and then others as quick-fire questions to all our contributors around the table here. So we hope as well to run a competition down the line which a listener who suggests our main discussion point will have the chance to join us here on the pod for an episode, rant about whatever they want to rant about.
And show us up for the frauds that we are.
Show us up for the clueless humans that we clearly are. So this week's chosen topic, the one we're going to discuss in a bit of length here, is from Zat Red Dinny on the Twitter. And he asks, who is the player linked with the club that you were happiest we did not sign? Now, I'm going to hijack this right from the start because, as usual, the way things have gone, I get in at the end and all the good shouts are gone. So I am going to say Shay Given. That's what I'm going to say. Because, for me, he's a hero with the national team. You want to think of him in a good way. And I think if you pull on our jersey, I think it would have gone to shit. And I think it would have ended badly. And the man's... He deserves more than that. So I'm absolutely relieved we didn't sign Shay Given. Andy, you have a shout?
I suppose I'd go with Barry when it was going to happen.
Gareth Barry.
It's not very well backed up because in the end, we ended up with Aquilini, you know, around the same time.
Mm.
But wasn't that just the biggest farce of a move that was nearly happening in Liverpool? Alonso going and Barry coming in.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So
for that reason alone, it's just
a standout. It's hard to pick on players that, you know, not normally it's players we missed out on. You know, normally we miss out on players and you're good. They didn't come. But it's quite rare, but Barry for me, yeah.
Okay. Excellent. What do you think, Phil, yourself? Any player that you're glad we missed out on that was linked with us at the time?
There's a list. I can think of Dave Weider being linked with us under Rafa.
Oh, yes.
Scott Dan.
Scott Dan and Roger Johnson as
Roger Johnson.
Oh, there's a trio. There's a trio right there.
I haven't gone on to
there's a trio.
What about Lee Cannamall as well? He was
Lee Cannamall.
We're taking Lee Cannamall yesterday.
Henry Winter's
favourite. I could name a team here at this rate.
Okay. Okay. So listen, that's quality. I like the way it ended up as a trio at the back there. Steve, a shout from yourself.
I didn't even get to the one I was going to.
Sorry, mate. Go ahead. Sorry, Steve. Go back to Phil there. Sorry, Phil.
John Allen Boomsong.
Okay. Boomsong. What?
It was a deal set up from, wasn't it? $8 million.
£8 million.
From Auxerre at the time, or was it Marseille? Julia.
And Souness came in and paid $8.5 million and went to Newcastle.
He went to Newcastle instead.
What a shout that was.
And history was made with Big Bad Boomsong.
Excellent. Okay, like that one. Steve, back to yourself.
I think there's definitely one anyway. He's now playing for the Seattle Sounders. It's Clint Dempsey.
Yeah.
Dempsey went to Spurs. The season he had with Fulham, he was absolutely, I think he was in the top five. He was definitely nominated for Player of the Year anyway. And looking to sign, it looked like to be a deal done. And he went to Spurs and just fell apart. His head just went when he went to Spurs. I don't know what that was. I just want to pull in a shout for a player we were linked with that we should have signed. And it's David Silva.
Still sticks in there.
What about Mikey Allen when he came back from Madrid?
Thank God that didn't happen. That was a bullet dodge. A bigger bullet dodge when he left Newcastle.
To do a job in a inverted commas.
Michael Drone.
Nobody's safe. All right,
we'll never get Michael Allen on now.
That's next week already. You do realise now we've got no Brendan Rodgers in next week's show, no Michael Owen in the week. I had the two of them lined up.
Oh man,
fuck's sake. Yeah. Anyway, right, let's move on.
I'd happily have a debate with Brendan.
I'm sure you would.
I don't think he would though. That's the problem.
Phil, I say you debate yourself and there's no one here. Let's move it along then. We're going to do some quick fire ones from some of the heads on Twitter then. The first one is from @drummer2314 and this is for you, Phil. And he says that we need to get that central midfield top of the agenda. It's coming back to you because this is your favourite, Phil. I know you love talking about this. Tell me something here. Give me something new.
I just like to get them into the midfield. That helps.
You want the midfielders in the midfield.
That would help. Don't worry about agendas. Just get them into the middle of the park.
Do you know what? That, you can't top that. We're going with that. Right. The next one, and this is for you, Andy. This is from @IrishScouse. How do you solve a problem like Enrique is the question.
You sell them. I mean, that's a simple solution.
Okay.
You sell them. For possession football, Enrique's just never, ever, ever going to be Rodgers' first choice left back.
Okay.
So you sell them and you buy someone that can keep the ball.
He doesn't need to keep the ball at the moment. Yes, he didn't have the greatest game.
It was very good.
I didn't think he was great, but I will say that link will play with Suarez's back.
And that ball from Suarez, you know, plays.
That diagonal ball and one day in the
room. He is good with linking.
He's a different player when he's in the top half of the pitch. It's like he's not near until he loosens up, but when he's in the middle, he's just unbelievable.
If he's shielding the ball out from,
he's the Messi of shielding the ball.
He's the best, right? And if he's in the other half shielding the player off the ball to run,
and what,
he's what just when he gets to the box then it just goes,
what a peculiar technique he's got. It's completely unique to him. He's like a slow articulated truck moving around the outside and then he gets away with it. He loves a wrestle. Okay, next man up is Stephen, and this is for you, Chief, from @CarlTrotman, and he says, Hendo, where do you see his best position being and at whose expense? Which I presume means that Carl reckons he has to move.
He does have to move. There's no question that he has to move. I think it won't be at anyone's expense, but I think when we see, we are seeing it as it is, but when we do see start to see the decline in Gerrard, Henderson is primed to take over. I think we'll see it on Saturday, where I genuinely think, because Lucas is obviously suspended for Saturday, I think Henderson will start in centre field. And will show us, show Rodgers what we need week in, week out in centre midfield. And whether he does that while he's making a show of Gerrard, or whether he does it and brings out a better player in Steven Gerrard on Saturday, it'd be very interesting to see. But I think Henderson is just nail on, as if he keeps up this, rise that he's had since he came to the club, where at one stage we all thought, okay, this kid could be doing something. Then he just went to the dogs because of the abuse he took, I think. But now,
I just think he was asked to play, and he lost a hell of a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Right, and he's an orthodox right winger, and he's done well in that right sort of attacking side of the 4-3-2-1 because he doesn't have to be a winger. He's able to come inside and cover whoever's drifting from the middle out to the wide or go across to the left hand side, and he's good at filling in. For me, Henderson isn't a Gerrard. He's more like a Lampard, a young Lampard, in that he has an incredible engine. He seems to have an ability to get into the box as a fourth man running or a fifth man running in terms of arriving there. And
when he's playing in the middle.
When he's playing in the middle. But that's my point. He's not the Gerrard, the 25-yard run.
No.
Who is?
The top corner
shot.
No. Don't go there. Please don't go there.
Why did you have to say that? I'm moving along. I'm so pissed off at that. I'm moving along now to the next question. Next question. Do you know what? I'm just going to throw this at you, Phil, just because you're after annoying me there now with that shout there. This is from @GrayNotDavid. And he asks, should Kelly be our wing back in Johnson's absence? I think you might have something to say about this.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. He was our best right back
after Johnson
last year. Nothing has changed bar him having the injury. He came on against United. I thought he did grand. I thought for the first game back in so long, he did actually fine. And while he mightn't be the Johnson, as in raiding down the right hand side, he's more than capable of getting forward. He's more than capable of supporting the attack. And as of all the players we have, he's the most natural in a right back position. So if we go back to our argument, should we play four or three at the back, or whatever we want to play at the back, right? For me, Kelly is the most natural of the right backs. There is an argument to play Sterling if we're just going to abandon. If you want to abandon the wing back as being a defensive, the argument is to actually play Sterling and Moses as the two wing backs, right?
I get that. No, 100%.
I'm going to go into the Crystal Palace game in more detail, right? Because I have a plan for this.
Cool.
But
Jesus Christ!
But no. For me,
these quick fire questions.
Yeah, these are quick fire questions.
So
the answer is yes.
Should Kelly be our wing back in Johnson's absence? 100% yes, unless we go down the mad route.
Thanks, Phil.
And can last we just one, get in that one?
Yeah, go.
I love Kelly, I really, really do hope we see a fit Kelly, you know, and because. He's our Ivanovic, you know. Like I love Ivanovic.
For you mean a natural defender?
He can play right back, and I think I think down the road Kelly could do a job in the middle as well.
Yeah.
I think he's so physical. There was a season, probably going back 3 years. One season ended, and he came back the following season a completely different looking player. He was huge, and I think he could do a job anywhere really.
And do you think, wasn't he shaping up the way he's come back this time? He had a lovely long. Flowing centre half locks and the Alice band, and he really looked the part. And is he ever going to get a game at centre half now? Has he a chance? He's so far down the depth chart. No, but I mean since we got all our, well, that hasn't helped.
Yeah.
But since we got all our new signings in, I mean, is Laurie ahead of him? It's a curious one.
I'll give you for me, he reminds me so much. Obviously not as good, but he reminds me so much of a Maldini type defender, right, in terms of what he can do. The way he plays the game.
Fucking hell, Phil, that's some shit.
I'm not saying he's the next Maldini, but in terms of style, in terms of the way he plays.
Sarah was good, wasn't that good though?
Yeah. No, he plays a strong, aggressive defensive game. And that's how Maldini played. It was a strong, aggressive defensive game.
Yeah.
He was capable of going forward, but they used Cafu and all in the right side of the Milan teams to give the real attack and thrust from fullback.
Yeah.
Maldini was always able to do a solid job from fullback. And for me, Kelly can do a solid job from fullback for us. Mm. And that, be it wing back or whatever. And ultimately,
similar Maldini. Marcus Babbel.
Yeah. And Maldini was able. Arbeloa
just
was brilliant at this.
I love Alvaro.
He should never have been that
guy. He'd probably be similar kind of right back to Kelly. Physical and no nonsense.
No one there is an
arc. Does the job. And for me, it's about doing the job, and he can do the job better than Henderson can.
Well, that was quick fires be Jesus, as you can see there. Last one for these is from @StuartKelly09, and he says Lucas has yet to turn up for us. Discuss. I aimed that one at myself because I want to stand in here and give Lucas a little bit of defence, because I think that he's suffering. I think he's suffering because of the man that he's standing beside and playing beside, and literally actually standing beside in the second half of matches, because the two of them seem leggy. I think that Lucas will come good. I think he'll really benefit if, as Stephen says, he gets a run alongside Hendo, but I don't think that's going to happen unless Stephen's injured. So has he turned up for us? Probably not. Certainly not in the way we'd like. Will he? Lap of the gods, I would say. Lap of the gods. So, thanks for your suggestions, folks. We're going to move on now to our preview of the Palace game. We've a couple of little ideas we want to talk about here. So we're going to start off by asking, what do we consider Palace's threats and Palace's strengths to be, seeing as we do have a team that we're going to play against? We might as well acknowledge them. Stephen, any ideas?
No.
No, okay.
I watched the Palace and United game there a couple of weeks ago, and I was actually surprised at how attacking Palace were in Old Trafford. They went for United. Maybe that's now the fear that United had for so many years under Ferguson is now gone. We can see that from the West Brom game last Saturday. And I would be genuinely worried if we end there 3-5-2 with the attitude of it's Crystal Palace.
Tony Palace.
They're going to come at us. Because we've seen the same way when Blackpool were in the Premiership under Ian Holloway. They went at teams because they didn't know how. They couldn't rely on their defence. Most teams, promoted teams, come up and they try and stay solid to the back, nick a goal on the counter-attack. Palace are completely the opposite. Palace will go and go and go at you. And if you score against them, they're going to try and score against you. They're not going to be happy with a 1-1 draw. They will keep going and going. They do seem to have a lot of pace on the side as well, which was a surprise. I think it was Jason Punchin that really impressed me that day when I seen him against United, although he was very good for Sunderland, for Southampton last season as well. So I would be worried about the pace they will bring from wide areas, especially if we do go 3-5-2.
Okay, that's Phil, your ideas on Palace threats?
Okay, Palace threats, for me, it's going to be like watching Blackpool play against us.
Without Chatham?
No, but they do have a better Chatham.
Oh, they do?
In Bannon. He's going to play, and he's going to sit, and he's going to dictate the play for them. They have Jednak and Dikoji in the centre midfield, and they will look to get a press high up and press at Gerrard.
He was the best player on the pitch against United, and he was sent off.
And then up front, if they start with Kevy and Punchin and Schmack, they'll have a focal point that Schmack will play on look to have a physical battle with Skirtle. And they'll look to get the two pacey lads in Punchin and Kevy. Now, they could always also go with Cameron and Jerome instead of Kevy, which they've used 2 weeks ago. And for me, their strengths come more in if with three up front and he plays a 4-3-3, they can put the three players on top of their three centre backs if we go three at the back. And then they'll have three midfield who will probably have more energy than us come the second half. And then it's whereabouts are we at that stage? Have we killed the game, or is there still a game to play? Because we put two past Sunderland, which made it a bigger mountain to come back against in the first half of the Sunderland game. If we can put two past Crystal Palace in the first half, I'll be confident that we'll probably look our best at the weekend. But if we haven't, if we go in with a one goal lead or it's nil all, I'd be fearful in terms of a result.
Okay, lovely. Andy, your idea, what do you think we're facing against Palace? Any particular threats you see or you've noticed?
It's something I think Rodgers has started to rectify now is that physical threat up at the back. You know, if they had Jerome, I think another time we would have struggled. I think the three at the back kind of with Touré and Sacco, I don't think there's anyone beating Sacco in the air with a ball. So I think that problem is nullified. I don't think Palace you have to respect for everything coming, but it should be Liverpool. They should be them worrying about what Liverpool are going to do, and not Liverpool kind of setting up to counteract what Palace have to offer. I think it's out of three teams that come up, they're the ones that started off the slowest. I think it's just nail on, you just go out and you beat them, and it's as simple as that, and it's completely unacceptable if Liverpool don't get 3 points in the weekend.
That's plain and simple. I like that. Our second thing that we want to look at is, what do we think the manager should do in terms of formation and tactics? Now, we've kind of touched on this early on, God knows we kind of have to do it to death actually, but I'm going to go around the table again and ask for a few ideas here. Steve, we'll start with you again. What would you like to see in terms of line up, the shape of it?
I want to see us go 4-3-3. I don't want to see this 3-5-2 at home, because we do have the tendencies to drop so deep, and with against a side with pace, that could really, really hurt us. I do think, obviously, with Lucas being missing, we're going to have more energy in the middle. I presume no one knows what the story is with Joe Allen yet.
Nobody seems to
know. No one seems to know what's going on. Whether he's still injured or personal issues or whatever it might be.
It's a hamstring, lads. I'm telling you now, hamstrings can be long.
But there's been nothing, that's what I mean, there's been nothing has come out to say there's no.
The problem, not sure, and we've seen plenty of Arsenal players have hamstring injuries and they've lasted for 6 months, like in terms of coming through, because it can go, and if the strength isn't there, it may just take a while. Just take a while for the heel probably. So
will Lucas being out, will it be a sort of a rush in getting him back?
Will he suspend it? Rush getting Alan back?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it will. I think it will go 4-3-3, and I think Henderson will come in. I think he has a massive call to make if he does go 4-3-3, because he needs to pick two centre halves and two full backs, not fucking four centre halves again.
Yeah.
We can't see that. Southampton murdered us when we went four centre halves at the back.
I think the only reason Enrique didn't play that time was because he was injured. Like he'll probably maintain his position, but like you say, who loses out?
Yeah.
And Steve, can I ask you who you see as the central three then?
Central three. 4-3-3. It's going to be Gerrard, obviously. Henderson and ideally Alberto.
Yeah.
But
we probably won't.
But I think it'll be Moses.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to see Alberto and then Moses, Sturridge, Suarez up front.
Okay.
But I think he will go with Gerrard, Henderson, Moses, and then maybe Suarez, Sturridge, Sterling. Maybe Sterling, but again, that's.
And do you think it's likely this 4-3-3, or is it what you want to see?
It's what I want to see. Likely? I think if we matched up 4-3-3 against Crystal Palace, we will be playing 4-3-3 regardless. I think we have the better quality to get the two or three goals in the first half and just kill off all hope that they have. As Phil said, I'll be worried about going in nil all at half time against them, because it will give them more confidence going, well, we're at Anfield, we're nil all at half time, we can get a result here. The same way it did when we played Blackpool
and Southampton
this season as well.
Okay, that's good. Andy, your thoughts on that in terms of what you think we should look like and maybe what we will look like, the difference between the two?
Look, I think Rodgers, he's just going to go again with the three centre-backs. Henderson comes in and plays with Gerrard, and then possibly Kelly comes in on the right. So I can see that happening. You might see Laurie get a game, but I think he'd stick with the same shape simply because how he's seen Sturridge and Suarez work up top. I think if he completely changed the formation, which you could be worried about there, is it not clicking so well up top. So I think he just goes with the same shape, and he kind of just replaces like what like. Yeah. Henderson comes in the middle, Lucas is obviously suspended, and then he plays Wisdom or he plays Kelly in that right. Wisdom seems to be out of favour, so Kelly.
You think Kelly is the only change and pretty much stays the same. I have to say, for what it's worth, as soon as we're going this way, I think that's the most likely. Brendan doesn't shake it up much.
Doesn't like to change the team. No, I agree, that's the most likely.
It's probably the most likely, but I understand. No, and I'd ask you what you'd like to see, Steve. Yeah. That's a different thing. But I think it is probably likely that it will be either Kelly.
There'll be one change.
Or perhaps Wisdom. Or at a wild guess, perhaps Sterling, although that's unlikely, in that right flank. And then
wouldn't be bad.
It wouldn't be bad. But yeah. And in fairness, he has been the man who stepped in the last couple of matches. But to start him, I know it's a big shift. Phil, your thoughts on that particular idea, what we look like, what we should look like.
Should or would?
Well, give us both. Except don't do it too long.
I'd like to see us go 3-4-3, right? And I'd like to see, like I was saying earlier on, I would actually like to see Agger, Agger, Skirtle and Sacco as the back three. Probably with Agger going central and Skirtle right and Sacco left. I'd have Toure and Henderson centre midfield.
Yes!
Toure and Henderson.
Right. Anything that gets called
see, out. Okay. See, this has been a really, really normal discussion until now. Okay. Now we've gone batshit. I'm fucking delighted. Right, Toure.
Left side.
Yeah.
Of the four. Yeah. I'm going 3-4-3, right? So I'd have left side of the four, I'd have Moses, as I said earlier.
Okay.
Right side, I'd have Sterling.
Okay.
Okay. And then in the three up top, we're going with Gerrard, just behind Sturridge and Suarez.
Ah, that's right. That's too much fun.
That's sexual football.
That is too much fun.
And that team will be Crystal Palace.
Yeah. I guarantee there are going to be people listening to this now going, that's the most crazy team I've ever heard, but I really like it.
The team,
I like it.
We're likely to see.
Yeah, likely.
I think we'll play four at the back purely because they play three up front.
Right, okay. Right?
And we don't want to be man on man at the back.
Okay.
And I think he will probably start Toure at right full. and he'll play Skirtland Sacco central and Enrique at left, and then he will have Hendo and Gerrard centre midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we'll probably look at the three and the one. So what I'd probably see Moses, Suarez, and I have a feeling Sterling's going to earn a run.
Okay.
With
I think he has earned a run.
Yeah, with Sturridge up front. So in effect, the only change we're making from the team that starts is that Sterling comes in and we make a slight
right,
change
and
in
you,
shape.
You change the shape. Okay.
That's how I think he'll go. It means that, as you said, minimum change to personnel, slight change in shape, but back to a shape that we're playing for the first couple of games, and we're at home. So it just gives us more attacking bodies in my mind. And we have Hendo in the centre with Gerrard. I think he'll add, as I said, he becomes a fifth man attacking and also a fifth man defending.
Which will free up Gerrard, which means that Gerrard might not look as late.
But Gerrard can stay deep and play the way he played against Stoke, and he doesn't have to run around.
Yeah.
And he can conserve his energy on his pitch.
Exactly.
If we're going to play, if he's going to go with minimal changes, that's probably the best way of getting it out.
It's going to be quite hard to see if that works with the two in the middle, which we're all presuming we're going to see. Which means we'll have Henderson and Gerrard, and that works, and it works as well as we all hope it works. It's kind of be hard to see where Lucas gets back in.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to see because he doesn't like changes. Rodgers doesn't like change, and if Henderson plays to his, it's a massive, massive game.
I'll just say, in, for me anyway, at the moment, it's only one game that Lucas misses out on. If Lucas was injured and misses out on two or three, I think yes, you might have an issue because his team doesn't like to change within a team. But the fact it's one game, and I think Lucas is a player he likes. Yeah. Lucas will come straight back into the team the following week. That's just
because Brendan's going to Brendan.
Do you think there's any chance we're looking at the match
Champions
and thinking we miss Lucas?
No, yeah. I think there's every chance.
Then we realise that the problem's Gerrard, not Lucas. That's the fear on Saturday, is that could happen. It means
the hardest thing to watch in football is the decline of a great player.
We're not looking at a Lucas that we've been used to seeing either. Like,
no.
we didn't talk about the goal that we conceded, but if you look at it again, if you get a chance. What Lucas does is just terrible. He's kind of just trotting along with that fella on loan from Swansea,
Keyson Young,
and he's got it on his left peg, and Lucas is just trotting along, thinking, "I have this under control." As soon as he puts it onto his right foot, we've a huge problem, a massive problem, and Lucas is miles away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think a Lucas that we were used to seeing is on top of him, and he's biting at his heels. But we're not seeing that from Lucas.
No one watched. No one watched Chiarini.
So I think. Yeah. Well, I think they're both as bad as each other at the moment. But I think it's just we're seeing a very ordinary Lucas that's not functioning.
Okay.
It's an ordinary midfield. The great thing about it is, and I don't want to come close to ending with negatives, right? The great thing about it is we're ruthless defensively, and we become ruthless attacking wise.
Okay.
And that's different. The way Liverpool has been for God knows how many years.
For sure. Right. Put that together then, Phil, and help us wrap up here with your idea of a prediction, just quick as you can.
Well, I'm going for 100% record, so I'm reckoning Crystal Palace for Liverpool now.
Oh, super. I love your predictions. Steve, a more kind of reality-based prediction from yourself?
Prediction result. I'm going for 4-0 Liverpool. And
big Liverpool win.
Big Liverpool win, I think.
Okay.
If he gets the team selection right, and Suarez shows up, he can have a field day against them. He can just take the piss all he wants.
It's Gabadon and Mariapa, or Gabadon and who else they have? It's fucking average anyway. But it's Gabadon. I'm not saying he's average, so of course he's going to have a blinder, right?
Yeah.
Gabadon.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Like Victor Wanyama.
Yeah. Gabadon and Mariapa are playing a centre half, and they had Moxie and I think a guy called Ward playing right full. So I think if you think of our attacking threat, right, we should have enough attacking threat to win the game.
Mm.
If we haven't scored going into 20 minutes to go, that we don't think to ourselves, Jesus,
and
the same as what happened against Southampton.
Okay. So, Andy, prediction?
Look, again, it goes back to the early goal. I think if Liverpool can score early, loosen up, you know, get the nerves out of the system, I think they can go on, and as Steve says, they can win 4-0, they can win 5-0, and they can put it with Suarez there. They could put a really, really good score together. So, I actually haven't thought about this fully, so hard to make a shout. But I'm going to just I'm going to be positive again. I said 3-0 last week, wasn't far off, so I'm going to say 3-0 again.
I think a big win as well. Well, I'm going to make it a 3 in a row predicting wins there. I think it'll be tight, and I think it'll be Denton and Archie, lad, that I was digging out at the start of the game, because I think he's, like we were all talking about, he's world class.
I want 10. I'd say 4.
I want 10. Okay, right, lads, we're going to wrap it up there. Today's day trippers were Phil Casey, Stephen Brown, Andy Young, and myself, Trevor Denny. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it hugely. That's why we do it. We'll speak to you soon. Thanks, folks. A minute and one.